We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm Nick Faye. With me, my guy, Jack Manuel. Jack, how we doing?
It's official. Jordy is our guy.
Yeah, officially the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets. Already made a move to add an assistant. We're going to jump to that and plenty more. Make sure you check the Buzz on all streaming platforms. But, Jack, what's on top of the menu?
What's on top of the menu, Nick, is basically a repetition of a couple of episodes ago. Jordy Fernandez officially announced as Brooklyn Nets 24th head coach. We'll be having a press conference that we'll dive deep into over the next couple of days, and we'll hear his reactions and hear him speaking to media. It was confirmed that Jordy Fernandez will continue as head coach of Team Canada, as both you and I predicted. He thanked, you know, Josiah, Clara, and Sean Marks for the opportunity, talked about his family, talked about being eager to get into it. The feeling was mutual across the board, and there's excitement and a bit of a buzz building between Jordy and the ownership and the front office of the Brooklyn Nets.
Yeah, I think the fan base is getting excited too. You know, you've heard a lot of positive things from the Kings fan base. Also, we heard from De'Aaron Fox saying that he thinks Jordy would be he's going to be a hell of a head coach. So always good to have an endorsement from, you know, the Kings' best player. And also just, you know, the vibes are up. You know, there's some excitement because there's some unknown. And just, you know, I really like that they keep talking about him kind of putting in like principles and habits and creating a level of structure, because that seems to have been an issue in Brooklyn probably the last four seasons under Steve Nash, under Jacques Vaughn. You know, it just wasn't there. And hopefully he can come in and establish, you know, an identity, a culture, and just a standard for the Nets that hasn't really been there since, you know, Kenny Atkinson. You know, the KD and Kyrie teams were great, but they did it a lot of just because they were great talent-wise, not because there was some amazing system or structure or just a consistent level of play. We really want to get back to that, where it's just kind of like, oh, you know, this player's out, we're going to plug and play somebody else, and we're going to still have a chance to win.
Yeah, and that comes from, you know, just setting the standards, and we're sort of seeing, you look at the history, we've spoken about quotes from Jordy Fernandez, the time in Team Canada and Sacramento as a lead assistant there, and all of it does bode well. But, you know, it's, again, all just talk. Theoretical, I guess. It's all talk right now, as you sort of alluded to. So it'll remains to be seen how he will be as a head coach. You know, I'm trying to provide both sides of it, despite the fact that, yes, like you and many other Nets fans, I'm excited about this proposition. I'm excited about this hiring, but you know, we'll need to see it all come into principle. And we heard Mikal Bridges also reached out to De'Aaron Fox about Jordy Fernandez. So De'Aaron Fox will be replacing Cam Thomas in next year's line. No. But in saying that, you know, it just shows that Mikal is probably going to be there, you know, semi-long-term probably. Maybe I'm reading too much into that. But yeah, a lot of stuff around Jordy Fernandez. And really looking forward to hearing him, you know, speak to the media and then hear his quotes and hear him speak, you know, and wearing the black and white and a nice suit and representing our franchise for the first time. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I think we'll get a real feel for him, you know, just hearing him speak at the presser and just kind of what he's envisioning for the Nets. You know, maybe not specifically, but just a vague idea of the way he wants to play and the expectations he has for players on the team.
Now, Nick, he's hired his lead assistant. It's Steve Hetzel, formerly of the Portland Trailblazers. He's also had some stints in Charlotte, Orlando. and also worked in the G League. I think he led the 2022 Portland Trailblazers to Summer League glory. I think Trinidad Watford was on that team as well. So we know that this guy's going to be awesome. Now, I'm a sicko, so I dived deep. I went into Reddit. I went into the Nets daily comments. I went into all of it. And I don't know why I saw some people saying, this guy hasn't had any success in any of the franchises he's been at. I'm like, guys, this is an assistant coach. Let's calm down. And I think for me, what this indicates is player development is going to be a really key standpoint and key principle for the Nets under Jordy Fernandez. And we even heard some quotes from Sean Marks when he was speaking to the BK Block that we'll get into a little bit. But I think this hiring indicates that also.
Yeah, I think they want to build the base of their coaching staff. Everyone has some level of player development almost. And like you said, you know, Marks, in which we'll talk about later, really echoed that. And also just the lack of improvement. You want to see guys have their best season with Brooklyn. You know, obviously, if they're 34, 35, you're not going to expect them to, you know, hit a new prime or anything like that. But when you're talking about, you know, 25, 26, 27, you know, you want those guys to push forward. You don't want to see them take a step back. And we saw that with a lot of players last year. So, you know, adding a guy like, you know, Steve, to the staff gives you something. He's also another defensive-minded guy. I saw some Portland people talk about how that's going to be a big blow for their staff. He was the most established guy on Chauncey Billups' staff. And ironically enough, Jordy was an assistant coach for him in the G League. So that's kind of an interesting little wrinkle right there, a relationship already built in a unique way. So pretty good stuff for the Nets. I mean, you want to add another well-known assistant that's really established themselves in the NBA. That's great to start with your coaching staff and someone who has a relationship with your now head coach.
Yeah, I think coaching teams matter as much as the head coach does in today's NBA. I think, you know, we hear so much about, you know, the people behind the scenes, the shooting coaches, the defensive coaches, the offensive coach, the player development people. You know, I think that really does matter. And, you know, under Steve Nash, you know, he had Ime Udoka, Mike D'Antoni, the bloody Michael Jordan, the dream team of coaches around him. Now, Jordy Fernandez doesn't have that, but I think establishing a team that shares the principles on both ends of the floor that you want to do and, you know, is willing to sort of challenge you a little bit, like Jordy did with Mike Brown, as I mentioned on a previous pod, having that culture of communication and look, this is all buzzy sort of words. Again, I mentioned that a second time, but, you know, it's the name of our show. But it's some of it can be tokenistic. But I honestly do think that the Nets need to reestablish themselves as a destination, sort of like, you know, Kenny Atkinson and all of his assistants and the offense and principles that they shared. There needs to be a style of play for the Nets because ultimately you can have, you know, the awesome quotes from Kevin Ollie and Jacques Vaughn and these sort of guys, but if they're not producing on the court and have a high level of, you know, identity on either end, even if the Nets are just a good defensive team, even if they're just a good offensive team, I see it more likely being the defensive end. But in saying that, it's about these guys implementing principles on the floor that our guys want to implement and that our guys can execute. So hopefully both of these hirings, be Jordy, be Helton as well, are going to bring something to the Nets.
Yeah, like you said, I think it's setting a standard and expectation, and now this is kind of the bar we need to hit every single game. And like you said, you know, defense seems to be what's in mind. Offense is obviously easier to find in the league. It's kind of really establishing yourself as a defensive team, especially with the players that the Nets do have. So like you said, it's all kind of buzz and hype right now, but I think there's something to it long as you don't read too deep into it. You know, long as you're not like, hey, you know, this team's winning 50 games next year. It's okay to be happy and excited about the staff. Just don't go too far.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, why not? Like, if you want to go too far.
I mean, you got a couple months to cool down.
Yeah, if Jordy Fernandez is going to be the next Mark Degnod, the Nets are going to win 20, like have a 10-game increase on their win record and be up to 50 games in the number one seed in the East in a couple of years. Why not? Go for it. But in saying that, Nick, are there any other more coaching thoughts before, you know, we dive in deep into it into a future episode where we hear Jordy speak to the team and the media before we jump into a few rumors and a few quotes here and there?
Let's hit the rumors. You know, we'll deal with that when the presser hits and the rest of the staff fills out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Nick, do you want to start with the Brian Lewis, Mark Scotto stuff? Do you want to start with Sean Marks speaking to the UK block? Where do we
go? Let's go with Scotto and Lewis first.
So what were your key takeaways from their extensive article, their extensive chat around Donovan Mitchell, Ben Simmons, Cam Thomas, Nick Claxton, and talking about Jordy Fernandez as well? What were your takeaways?
Yeah, I would say I think it kind of cemented the Donovan Mitchell stuff. You know, hearing it from Brian Lewis added again, you know, there's been a lot of smoke around that. That's kind of locked in. As we've talked about and kind of predicted, that 2025 offseason is going to be huge for the Nets. It's going to really be kind of a deciding factor on what they do. You know, do they go all into the free agents? Do they go for a reset that year? That's going to be a big decision for them. The Clack stuff is up in the air. That's kind of 50-50, which we've talked about in the past. You know, Brian Lewis brought that up. And also they kind of talked about some of the other veteran minimum free agents, you know, Lonnie Walker, Trenton Watford, Dennis Smith Jr., all those guys kind of up in the air, probably more likely to be gone than be back. And then also, I think we got some hype around Noah Clowney, you know, the Nets essentially calling him their golden child. I think that was a somewhat big deal. You know, the hype of the fan base matches the hype of the organization. So those are probably the big takeaways. What about you, Jack?
Yeah, I think this quote, like from Brian Lewis, the most sets me and sticks out. I think everything they've done implies to me for the last year and change that this is a reset for 2025. Now, I've also added the caveat that there are a few players who would accelerate that process. Donovan Mitchell is one of those few. So it's going to be, look, a Donovan Mitchell caliber of player, which I think is the least you would say. And look, we've seen him ball out in game one, and he's currently balling out against the Orlando Magic in game two as we record this. I agree with that. And again, both you and I have somewhat measured takes in terms of, okay, what are you giving up? What assets are you giving up for Donovan Mitchell? If he wants to leave and he is selected Brooklyn as his destination, for me, it'll be a two or three horse race. I think the two biggest horses or largest horses in this race are going to be Miami and Brooklyn, if that is the case. And I think Brooklyn have a better case to, in terms of the assets that they do have. But if Donovan is like, no, I want to play with Bam, then it's going to be a sort of one-way sort of street. It depends on how Cleveland go. We've sort of spoken about this in similar fashion when it came to Damian Lillard in the previous offseason. So Donovan Mitchell being the lowest caliber of player that the Nets are willing to sort of throw in a few assets for leaves me comfortable with where it currently stands, because I think he's a really talented guy and, you know, a genuine all-NBA caliber player.
And young enough. First team.
And young enough as well, fits sort of age demographic, a little bit younger than Mikal Bridges. So, and then allows you to hopefully not give up all those assets and go in for asset number two in the future, in next year's offseason, be it Tatum, etc., all those sort of names that we've sort of seen that are alluded to it. So I think that's the big one for me that I sort of took away. You know, Cam Thomas, his restricted free agency, you know, some hype and Noah Clowney, all those sort of different things, Ben Simmons and how the Nets view him. I think the number one thing is that Donovan Mitchell is in the Nets' sights. It's going to be whether Donovan Mitchell has sights for Brooklyn or elsewhere.
Yeah, and also, you know, how the rest of the playoffs play out for Cleveland. You know, if things bounce their way and they end up in the Eastern Conference Finals, he might be happy to stay there. Who really knows? And I thought it was interesting, too. Lewis said, you know, players like Donovan Mitchell or something along those lines. So I would assume Brian Lewis has heard a couple more names other than Donovan Mitchell that the Nets may be targeting this offseason.
Any inkling on who you think that could be, Nick?
We'll save it for another episode.
We got plenty of time in the offseason. Plenty of time. But yeah, there was a lot of good chat about it in terms of, you know, the free agency. And I think we'll do a big free agency episode around the guys like Dennis Smith Jr., Trenton Watford, yep, Lonnie Walker, and Nick Claxton as well. We did hear a little bit around Nick Claxton, Nick, because Mark Scotto's done some extensive reporting, yep, interviewed Nick Claxton. He did also mention that Detroit could be in line to offer or be after Nick Claxton's services. Now, I don't understand why. I think, for me, hearing that is Nick Claxton going to Mike Scotto, hey, can you juice up my numbers a little bit? Can you get this out there so I can get an extra $2, $3 million when I'm doing some negotiating? Because with Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren, and Nick Claxton as your bigs, that just doesn't make sense in the modern NBA.
Yeah, it was brought up by James Edwards, who was on Scotto's podcast. So he mentioned that Jalen Duren's not a good rim protector. Isaiah Stewart, not a good rim protector. They desperately need rim protection. They have money to spend. And I think he was kind of referencing that, like, Detroit wants to be good sooner than later. And Clax would kind of come in and establish and be a real big. Obviously, offensively, the combination of Clax and Duren, terrible. You know, offensively, Stewart and Clax, not very good either. So really interesting. I made the joke on Twitter, you know, another year, you know, Pistons are running up the price of a Nets free agent, because that's essentially what's kind of happening in that situation. So something to just keep an eye on. You know, I think they also mentioned the idea of a sign and trade in that scenario too. We know the interest they've had in Cam Johnson. Could there be something cooked up between the two teams that could be beneficial for both parties? Something to, you know, keep an eye on just for the offseason. And Detroit and Brooklyn have made an array of deals in the past.
Yeah, the two quotes from Scotto and Lewis, I think Brooklyn has to bring him back. They can't lose him for nothing. Again, I think we all understand that. We've spoken about sign and trade sort of stuff. And Lewis follows up, to be clear, I think the fretting was last summer on carving out the money to sign him. I think they're reasonably confident that they can, as of today, come to some sort of an agreement. He, I think, also said that he's above 50-50 of Clax re-signing. I'd probably say that too, just because of the fact that, yet Detroit, I just don't see it. Like, they have the space. What is it, 60 million plus, yeah, or something around sort of that. So they have the money. And maybe if you offload Isaiah Stewart in a trade and you sort of have the bigs, the young bigs of sort of like, it's a Kongwu and Capella or something like that in Atlanta, but that hasn't worked really well for the Hawks. But yeah, it's, for me, a bit of negotiating through the media from Nick Claxton and probably his team. And I respect that. Does it get him extra money? I don't know. I honestly think that, as I've alluded to and I've preached before, that the Nets have more leverage. If they go to Clax, hey, you want 25? Go and get it if you think you can get that, and we'll sign and trade you. If you can't, we'll give you 15 to 21 or whatever that number sort of is, and you can stick around. So I think that the ball is still in Brooklyn's court, but things could change and priorities could change for other teams. But I think the Nets are in a better position than sort of Nick Claxton is in terms of the negotiation toing and froing.
Yeah, I think it's a tough market for him. I mean, just being a center that's not top five, you know, it's not necessarily, you don't always get paid how you're supposed to get paid. And it depends on the teams that have cap space and how they value and how they view your skill set moving forward. So really interesting stuff. And like you said, you know, we talked about in a previous episode, maybe it's one of those contracts where a lot of incentives, and maybe it's even more team friendly where the contract's declining as it, you know, moves forward. And also even the potential of, you know, a team option on the last year of the deal or something like that. So it'll be interesting how it plays out in terms of the leverage for both parties.
Nick, we'll get to Sean Marks to finish the episode. And there was a couple of things that I sort of took away from this, and you can jump in whenever you see fit. He's sort of alluding to The New York market attracts stars. The team is going to attract stars. It's just a matter of when we do that. He also alluded to, we don't have to do this. We have to do pathway A, B, or C. I've heard that before, just before we got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. It just made me think of that when I saw that quote. He also alluded to the draft as well. And he said, as it pertains to the draft, we don't have a pick this year yet. You always take the best available unless you have multiple picks right in that range. Then you can get more creative. I think those were probably the two things that stuck out. He spoke a little bit more about X's and O's and some coaching stuff and that sort of thing. But those two quotes, Nick, what stuck out to you upon hearing that?
You know, about the plan and just the New York market thing, I think, you know, it makes a lot of sense. It sounds good. Will Sean Marks execute and will he be patient? You know, I think that's a big question. Will you jump on the first star that wants to come? Will you overpay a little bit for them to come? Or will you be a little bit more balanced and under control and, you know, try to negotiate the deal or maybe, you know, pick your target a little bit better and not just jump on whoever's available first and wants to come? You know, maybe just kind of sit and understand, how is this player going to allow me to build a championship team, especially with the assets I'm giving up in this trade? So a lot of levels to that, and just see how it all kind of works out. And I think with the draft stuff, you know, I think he's always pretty active. You know, you always hear the Nets are pretty active looking for trades and stuff. You know, DFS could be moved. Dennis Schroeder could technically be moved. You know, who knows, you know, even if it's, you know, a Claxton something set up for the summer, or who knows, you know, there's a couple different options on the table for the Nets. And they do have multiple avenues. You know, it's just a matter of, can those avenues lead to success, or are they kind of dead ends?
Are you leaning by some of his comments that you think the Nets are going to get involved in this year's draft, despite the fact that it's a bit weaker? I think some of that's a bit noisy because I think it seems somewhat deep with role players and where the Nets would be picking or whoever they trade for or offload, as you alluded to with DFS and some other guys, Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges, whoever else it might be. Seems to me that Sean Marks, he's a good drafter. He has a good team around him that helps him with his scout and is good at that. I think that Sean Marks wants to get involved in this draft.
Yeah, I think with the team, especially, you know, you mentioned Brian Lewis saying this is kind of like a reset year to prepare for 2025. Why not add another young player that could be a long-term role player for you? And we talked about this a little bit on last offseason, how young players, especially rookies, really second round picks, are going to carry a lot more value moving forward as role players because of the contracts and the ability to kind of stay under the cap standard, luxury tax, all those different things. So I wouldn't even be upset if they just landed like 2 second round picks and took two swings. You know, Jalen Wilson really has worked out for the Nets this year. You know, maybe they could find one other guy like that and that'd be awesome.
Yeah, and Jalen Wilson earned himself an NBA contract.
Yeah.
If they could find another guy that would be of that ilk, gives you cost control, gives you a role player, gives you some depth to the roster. And I think Sean Marks is pretty good at that. You know, we've given him criticism plenty before, but we also give him his flowers, and some of his flowers are around the drafting and scouting.
Diamonds in the rough are kind of his thing.
Big time. Nick, any final thoughts before we wrap this one up?
Not really, Jack. You know, it's, again, just creating excitement because there's a level of unknown. We don't really know what's going to happen in the Nets. Sean Marks kind of played it well, saying, hey, we have multiple avenues. We can do all these different things and kind of keep you glued to what the Nets are doing and trying to break down every little detail of what they do. So should be really a fun summer.
We'll be breaking down every little detail this summer on The Buzz for sure.
Yes, sir. Jack, always a pleasure. Big thanks for listening. Check The Buzz on all streaming platforms.